Hello, my friends. We're back. And welcome to the Space Game Junkie Podcast. I, as always, am your co-host, Brian. And joining me, as always, is your co-host, Jim.
Howdy ho!
Broadcast live from Windows 10.
Oh, Windows 10. It's kind of sexy?
Yeah.
Is it sexy at all?
It's kind of freaky, sexy, weird. I don't know.
Sadly, we are still sans Hunter. We're not sure when we're going to get him back. Hunter, please return to us soon. We do miss you. Get a better job or a closer job or something. I'm glad you have a job, but get a closer job, maybe. We have a couple of guests with us this afternoon. Joining us from Washington. Where in Washington, guys?
Near Bellingham. Actually, well, Adam's near Bellingham, and I'm actually just a little south of Bellingham. So the Whatcom County, Bellingham, Washington area. North of Seattle.
Is that the part with the Starbucks in it?
No, that's all of Washington is a big Starbucks, but okay. we're about an hour and a half north of Seattle.
Okay, well, joining us from wherever that is to talk about their upcoming 4X game, Lord of Rigel. Oh my god, I'm already fucking.
So you pronounce his name right, and then you fuck up the name of the game.
I know.
So you're pretty great, right?
Like, I'm golden. No, Lord of Rigel, Adam and James Rohrbaugh. Did I do it? Did I do it right?
You did it. Quick point of clarification, Lord of Rigel. But you're so close.
Rigel.
We should refer to it as Lord of Rohrbaugh.
See, I get shit from my girlfriend all the time for saying things wrong, like Mario and Nevada.
I get shit for saying things wrong, like make me a sandwich. Don't do it.
No, I'm not gonna. Okay. I'm not gonna. So thank you, gentlemen, so much for taking the time to join us. We wanted to play your game for a while. So for folks who aren't familiar with it, why don't you throw out the elevator pitch as to what Lord of, it's Rigel? Rigel? Like hair gel? Rigel? Okay. I don't know why I said Rigel. Okay, leave me alone. throw out the elevator pitch for Lord of Rigel to the folks on the stream and the podcast who may not have heard of this game before. And if they haven't, I'm at fault. But anyway, please go ahead.
Adam, do you want to take it or do you want me to take it?
Oh, I'll take it.
All right, go for it.
Lord of Rigel is a space strategy game where what we're basically doing is a lot of these games are all about conquering the stars and taking over the galaxy. Mm-hmm. And we're viewing it more as like you're building a civilization and you're shaping the galaxy. And one of the big things that makes this stand out from a lot of these other games is, first off, we are hearkening back to a lot of the sci-fi that we loved in the 90s. Things like Babylon 5 and Star Trek Deep Space Nine and that kind of vibe that those things had. And a lot of the strategy games that we really liked from the time period. Things like Sid Meier's Alpha Centauri and Master of Orion 2.
Mm-hmm.
And we're playing it seriously. There's been a lot of games that have come out recently that they're really playing up the joke side of things. And we're trying to take it more like, yeah, this is a modern take with modern graphics of what those sorts of games were. But we're doing a few things that we're hoping are going to kind of stretch the strategy genre a little. We're going to be kind of experimentive. One of the big things pulling a page out of Babylon 5 is having these two elder races, the Rigelans and the Arcturans, that are in this Cold War with each other. Right. And even today on our website, we just posted up a thing about recent galactic history, which outlines a bit of the beginnings of this sort of big Cold War that players can get involved with. So nice. The game isn't so much about outright conquest, but it's about trying to navigate and guide your civilization through a very turbulent galaxy with a lot of history.
Oh, that sounds awesome. You hit a lot of my buttons there, especially Deep Space Nine. Oh my god, I love Deep Space Nine so much. So guys, we have in our hand I'm just going to say this right off the bat as a disclaimer, a very, very, very early pre-alpha. I don't know if you can see it down here in the corner. It's 0.01 pre-alpha. So this thing might crash. It's not complete. It's not done. Just FYI, so you don't think we're talking about a complete game here. And it crashes, and you're like, "Oh fuck this shit!" No, this is still in the oven. Okay, you wouldn't eat chicken that's still in the oven, so don't judge. Okay, so let's start a new game here. So that sounds pretty awesome. I like the vibe you have going, here. And I also like that you have a separate skirmish mode.
Yeah, that was one of the features when we were trying to plan out kind of how we wanted to do this project, how we would get funding, et cetera, for the project. We kind of thought you could make a whole game around the skirmish mode and Master of Orion. Because Master of Orion had a ship combat, so we kind of wanted to do something similar, and thought we could make a whole skirmish mode. But in the end, it kind of became a great mode for experimenting. So players can kind of try out different technology and different ship designs, and then they can do that kind of in skirmish where they're not having to play the single-player game to figure out that a design does or doesn't work.
I have to say, one thing I really like about your... Oh, that loading screen. I do love that loading screen. If I can get that as a screensaver, by the way, that'd be amazing. One thing I love about your ship design, and one thing I hate about a lot of 4Xs is the ship design. So one thing I like about yours is you don't make me put in shit like bridges and life support. Like, that shit should just come standard feature, you know? Like,
And we totally agree with you. I mean, that's kind of why, I mean, for those who know, like, early 90s games, this screen should look remarkably familiar.
Yeah.
But there are some upgrades and some tweaks and tuning that have been done to it. But I completely agree. There's a lot of the modern games are about, like, customizing. It's like, do I care if my plasma cannon is on the 12th grid back from the bridge section? It's kind of irrelevant, and I think sometimes when you get into a ship designer like that, players kind of get lost in the minutiae of designing a ship, not really realizing that it's just one element in a 4X game. You're really a space emperor or president or whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
Empire, like, does it matter if you're worried about, you know, on what part of the ship, you know, the box for the life support system or whatever it is? It's just kind of silliness.
Yeah, having the janitorial support module losing power because of the death ray isn't really that fun.
Yeah.
No, it doesn't seem that fun. Now, I do have a question, though. Like, I'm building a cruiser here, and it has no shield system. Why can't I add one?
So if you go onto the ship systems on top, you can actually click on shield system, and you can select... You can do the same thing for armor. So actually, if you want, Brian, it's kind of hard with the Twitch having some latency.
Yeah.
What you can do, though, is if you noticed when you were in the skirmish setup, before you hit the ship design, you were actually able to select a cost level and a technology level. And what that will do is, in this mode, you can filter out... different tech, etc., based on your research level, and you can kind of build ships and tech to whatever scenario that you want, which kind of may seem odd to players at first, but think of it this way. It'll help you strategize your research technology in the core game, right? Think of it as a chance to kind of practice or study these different systems without losing the game to figure out that a design doesn't work or that it's no good.
Right. Oh, okay, that makes sense. I didn't see that you could do that, but now it makes sense. So we're gonna try this big ship against all these other little ships.
And one thing, you already hit start because that good old Twitch delay. One thing that you can do in the ship designer that is rather slick as well is that if you click on the ship in ship designer, it'll actually take you to a full 3D. Rendering of the ship that you can rotate and view. And it will ultimately, when it's done, I think this current build doesn't have it, but it'll have like all the basic stats for the ship. It'll say, like, you know, ship class, number of decks, estimated crew complement, just kind of those, you know, interesting lore bits that kind of pull players in.
Yeah, this is going much better than the last time.
I told you, it was going to be worth the upload. So it was one of those things that when we sent the build over, it's kind of like, so we really don't, like, we weren't expecting to have it built. We had, like, half the systems in the game torn apart. in fact, because, like, one of the things was you're like, let's look at the game. I'm like, okay, but hold off. We don't even have, like, our econ system was torn apart. It was working, and then we added some deficit spending rules. And when we did that, we tore apart the econ system, so you couldn't even build anything. I was like, okay, well, we can, I guess, look at the pretty planet backgrounds, but I kind of want to show you guys a little more than that. So one thing, it looks like you're going back into skirmish mode. So one thing that you can do, if you're looking...
Ooh, there we go.
Okay, assuming that you've gotten to the nifty part with the 3D viewer.
Yeah.
So one thing that you'll... this is using the old viewer. It'll be much brighter and much prettier. We actually have been transitioning our whole GUI system from NGUI to UGUI. So this is actually the old GUI system. We have a much prettier, fancier, has all these nifty icons in our full version, which we can look at in the core game. But what was I thinking about? I wanted to also show something else. Oh, yes. So if you go back into tactical combat, one nifty feature that we have is that when you double-click on a ship, you can actually take a perspective camera view.
You can. Look at that.
So that's kind of one thing that we thought was really cool, to kind of offer players something kind of a little different to spice things up. And then ultimately, one of the things that we want to do, too, is we will want to add, like, a cinematic camera. So when you're firing off weapons and stuff like that, the camera would track those weapons and kind of give you like a movie style feel to it. That way players, you know, a lot of people say, top down is boring and turn-based is even more boring. Looks like the AI had a little lock.
Yeah, it actually hit me a little bit. Okay, let's see. Oh, I can't do anything.
No, the AI locked. The turn button's disabled.
Oh. Oh, well.
There you go. So we had AI lock. And I'm betting it's that error that one of our programmers caught. It's funny because I was telling him, like, yeah, we'll want to get stuff moving here pretty quick today so we can get you guys a build. And he's like, I just noticed. He goes, there's this thing with our 2x2 ships. He goes, it may cause a random lock. And sure enough, it did.
Early access.
I was like, time's up. So just go ahead and you'll want to just go to menu. And you can just go back to the main menu.
Yeah, I did.
And yep, there you go.
Yeah, man, I wish there was a way to do screen share at the same time as streaming. We tried it once, and yeah, that was a bad.
You should be able to through Skype actually do a screen share.
Oh, I could try. Hang on.
Yeah, we've actually done that before with coder chats.
I can try. Let's see. How do I do that exactly?
So you just hit the plus button, and then it's the third option down. It should say share screens.
Okay. Plus button. Oh, hang on, folks. We're just figuring shit out. Plus button. I don't even see a plus button.
So you should see in the call box. There's.
Oh, I see it. There it is. Yeah. Okay. Share screens. Yeah, that one. Start. Okay, so I'm sharing it.
Yep.
You guys see it?
Loading up on our end.
It's loading up.
Yep, there we go. Got it.
Oh.
Perfect. Now I'm watching you in real time.
Seems to be working so far.
Yep. So you can't do combat around gas giants. It will probably come down the road when we get outposts and stuff like that in the game. But for the moment, we're just doing just the core rocky worlds that you would have normal combat around.
Oh, okay. Yeah, because why would you fight over a gas giant? I guess that makes... Come here, buddy. There we go. You kill him. Womp.
Okay. Yeah, we did a bunch of performance increases, too. So you should be getting a pretty decent frame rate.
Oh, yeah, it's fine.
Looks like about 130 frames right now, so yeah. Pretty solid.
That's fine. Oh, I think the turn button locked again. Yes, yeah. It did.
Yeah.
It did. So I wonder. That is really weird. I wonder what conditions you're hitting.
Maybe it's because I have many of these same ships. Let's try something else.
It shouldn't.
Well, let me try making another ship. Let me try making another enemy ship. And
we'll make some frigates. Let's see how that goes.
Okie dokie. So anyway, folks, what we're playing with, if you're not watching the video, we're playing with the ship designer, which is pretty streamlined compared to ship designers in a lot of other games that make you add you know, like we were saying earlier, like I don't want to worry about where the bridge goes and where the power converter. I mean, some people like that shit. I'm an emperor. I just want to be like, make that ship a missile ship, make that ship a beam ship, you know, and we're done, you know, make it simple, you know, come on. Okay, so let's design
a frigate.
Yeah, okay, so we're gonna add missiles, just lots of fucking. Just all missiles. That's all it's gonna do is missiles. Just do.
Oh, you're oversized now.
I see it. I got it. Okay. So five missile launchers and armor.
Ooh.
Ooh, that's neat.
Yeah.
Ooh, I like that design. It's kind of Klingon-y a little bit. Kind of a mix of Klingon and Ferengi a little bit, which I like. Okay, we're gonna build the
Vodka, or are you going to give it a new name? Vodka?
Yes. Yeah, the vodka.
One of our programmers who was working on the ship designer, he kept naming some of the human ships America Strunk.
Yeah, that was one of his big things, yeah.
So we're going to add a couple of those and a couple of those.
Some vodka class.
And we're going to add one of those.
One Voyager, uh-huh.
And
look at the balance of power, though. Ooh.
Yeah, I know, it's going to be fun. let's see how we're. I like that simple balance of power thing. Ooh, looky here. Okay, we got lots of missiles. Okay, so
maybe hit enter and let them.
Oh, all right.
Missiles.
Ooh, they did nothing.
Why is it locked? Try this real quick.
Okay.
Curious. Try just exiting and restarting the game.
Okay. Yeah. Folks, the stream is going to go black for a second while we do this. So, yeah, folks, this is the fun thing about – this is what I love about talking early access. I love seeing how the sausage is made. I do. I really do. So stuff like this just – it tickles me.
Beyond early access. This is like instead of sausage, you're dealing with proto-veal.
Well, no, I'm saying
Brian start testing the game for us, because considering I haven't had a crash until Brian said something yesterday about it, I really just think we should just have Brian test things.
I'm fine with that. I have a lot of experience as a game tester. Oh, God damn it. Hang on.
Oh,
okay,
yeah.
I'm gonna get hit by YouTube's copyright thing just for that little bit of music. I know it. All right. We're back. So folks, we had to restart the game because I use early access as kind of a catch-all term now for games that aren't complete, because that's kind of what other people are doing. And you know what confuses me about that, if I may have an aside? Some people will like have their game in early access but still label it 1 point something.
Oh god, no.
Like no, that's not that. No, stop it.
Yeah. Folks, it's when all the features are implemented and working correctly.
Right,
that's
when all the content is in that you want at launch. And 1.0 is a finished gold master. Like, I don't know if you young kids remember, but back in the day, you didn't get like an early access thing on Steam. If you were a reviewer and you were getting a review copy, you might get in the mail a gold master, which is the master they would send for duplication when games used to come on CDs. Or DVDs. Remember those days?
I for one, welcome our gold masters.
How long have you guys been doing this programming thing, by the way?
We don't actually, in terms of us doing the program, we don't actually program the games. Oh. We actually have people.
Design, How long have you been in the design thing?
Gosh, Adam, how long have you been doing design for?
Oh, God, off and on. I mean, my main job is actually an archaeologist.
How long has the podcast been going now? About that long.
Why?
Oh, you asked, like, how long has he been doing design? It's like, well, how long have we been on the podcast? Since about 8 o'clock. So.
I like how you can just randomly generate galaxies, like, on the fly, and they have a seed. I enjoy that.
Yeah, so you can always insert the number from that. But, yeah, I guess also, off and on since 1998 on...
Hold on a second here, Adam. Just backtrack real quick. Hit cancel. Go play the Nebula. Show something pretty off.
Oh.
You back out. No. Stay, yeah. Just,
there you go.
Yeah. And then you can actually click on
Uxmoy in the middle of the Green Nebula. That's a good one.
Oh, I see. Oh, looky.
Yeah.
Oh, I did not notice that. Okay. And then we'll just add a couple of these.
Go ahead, Adam. Answer this question.
I've been doing stuff off and on since 1998 because...
Oh, my gosh.
Descent Free Space Silent Threat, that expansion.
Whoa, really? Some,
missions into that, so...
Oh, wow. That's great. I never finished Silent Threat. I'm sorry.
No, Silent Threat is... it's a little wonky.
It's kind of like a redhead stepchild of the Free Space series.
Yeah, it definitely is.
More recently,
oh yeah,
Diaspora Shattered Armistice was working on that with Carol. Name number two on the credits, and our lead artist for Lord of Rigel, who goes by Newman. He did the majority of the artwork for Diaspora. So I was doing a lot of 2D artwork and UI. He was doing the 3D artwork. And that's basically kind of how we've broken it down for LOR. There's a lot of the interface art, the nebulas and planet textures you all saw. That's my work. And all these ships you're playing with are all done by Newman.
So I have a question about Diaspora then. Mm-hmm. So this is going to be the rest of the show. So,
because we loved Diaspora.
Yeah,
Diaspora,
the only problem is that the game is like three missions long, and we.
Well, Lord of Rigel is going to be much more than three missions long.
way to bring it back!
It's like Diaspora. It's wonderful. Like the only thing that I want for that is more of that. So. Why did it get so short?
Newman and I can make more Diaspora.
Okay. Fagata.
Then we can take a couple of months and buck out the remaining ships.
Well, I mean, getting the game to the point where it's at is the hard part, right? And then throwing extra missions in there is just like mission editor time, right? So,
well, the reason there hasn't been another major release is... because we've wanted to take the time to do justice with the artwork. And we've got a couple of things that Newman has finished for release too. But once again, Lord of Rigel being a commercial project, this has taken obviously a much higher priority.
Right, because you've got to get paid, right? So
I'm sarcastic when I'm saying, if you want more Newman ships, help support this so he can take some time off. I shouldn't be speaking for him to do some more Battlestar Galactica stuff on his free time. Because obviously we can't get paid for doing that type of work.
Well, you got to eat, right? But,
yeah,
you know, I don't know, man. I'm ready to write the check just for you to go do some more. So.
We love it. We absolutely love it. We do. We absolutely just adore it.
Yeah, that game's fabulous. So the original history of that, wasn't it originally like Beyond the Red Line and then some things happened and whatever? Mm-hmm. Or is that a whole separate project?
Beyond the Red Line, I'm not aware of what's actually going on.
I think Beyond the Red Line was a separate thing.
Okay, because it was really similar looking. At least.
It was the same team. We left Beyond the Red Line due to creative differences.
I don't think Otto's going to work.
Yeah.
It must be that issue that Vu was talking about.
It's got to be what Vu was mentioning with 2x2 ships. So the cruisers are just too powerful.
It has to be that non-air.
The divide by zero.
Yeah,
so
got it.
If this is like a show-stopping thing, could we roll back to the previous build?
No.
This
is fine. Okay. I mean...
let's try this real quick, because I have no problems. So go to Skirmish.
Got it. So, Diaspora. And so that was Adam. You've worked on Free Space and Diaspora. Diaspora, excuse me. James, what about you? What have you worked on?
So my big thing was I did work in Star Trek Legacy.
Was that the Bethesda one?
Yes, it was the Bethesda one.
I never played that one.
The one that was supposed to bring hope to all of the Star Trek gamers, but ultimately just crapped all over us.
Yeah, the reviews were pretty... I'm sorry, the reviews at the time were pretty bad.
Yeah, and like I said, I worked with Star Trek Legacy. I wasn't like on the design team. I actually did a lot of modding as part of the modding community for that. We worked on a mod called Star Trek Legacy, the Legendary Generations mod, which is one of the top total conversion mods out there for it. I worked on that for like 2.5 years. Other than that, just been an avid gamer. But yeah, Adam has a much more extensive history with game design than I. I just play games and love to play games. So.
Oh wow. So what got you guys started on this, and how long have you been working on it now? It's been a little while, right?
Yeah. So that conversation. Literally, Lord of Rigel was conceived of, actually in my living room, which sounds terrible. Now that's almost like blueing myself. But it was essentially, we thought of the concept of Lord of Rigel in my living room. And we were just talking about games in general, 4X games, and wouldn't it be great if certain games did this, certain games did that. Really quick on the game design, let's do this real quick. Let's get rid of, let's go back into the ship designer.
Okie dokie.
Let's make a new ship here real quick. So sure. build a cruiser.
Okie dokie.
Let's put some shields on it.
Okay. Class 3.
And then let's put some nice armor on it.
Duranium.
Yeah. Why not? Get the good stuff. Let's put a sweet computer on it so it hits every time. Computer.
Positronic. Ooh, Data's in there. Data's up in that shit.
Yeah, we just hooked Data's head to.
And then let's...
Just like that. My favorite episode of Star Trek is Disaster. Of Next Generation is Disaster. That's the one where they added Riker to take Data's head off.
Oh, yes.
Remember that one? And hook it up to engineering. And
Is that like a Star Trek mod? Where they...
Data's head.
Actually, watch. Someone will probably put... there's that. What is that game? It's called Habitat, where you're taking all that shit around orbit and using it as weapons and stuff. And one of the things you can get is a Statue of Liberty head that shoots fire. So someone will probably put in a Data head. Or someone should. Anyway, okay, so we got the
Statue of Liberty head.
Drive doesn't matter. I mean, it can. It just, yeah.
It makes ships go faster.
They go faster. So let's go ahead and add weapons. Let's add an ion cannon. Let's make it heavy mount, and let's make it auto fire.
How do I do that?
Oh, see down there.
What's on modifications? See down there, you can toggle those. Yeah, there you go.
Oh.
Let's go ahead and max those out.
Okay.
Oh, well, we're not going to give them like a laser beam, shelf beam weapons?
We can, sure, go.
Yeah,
for
put on a laser, click on continuous.
Woo, okay.
And now it's a laser beam, did you see that? Ooh.
Ooh, laser. Ooh, okay.
Uh-oh, that's too many. Okay, you can only have one laser.
Okay.
So you guys are getting no delay on the Skype thing. Wow, that's really great.
Yeah, we actually do this when we do coder streams with our guys. We'll actually, all of us will share a Skype chat, and then we'll just stream out.
Because, Jim, haven't we tried this before, and it just didn't work?
Haven't we tried what before?
Skype screen share.
Oh, the Skype, yeah. I don't know. It might. It's got potential.
It might vary from game to game. Anyway, so this is the Glacier.
Yeah, Glacier. So let's go ahead and let's build a bunch of those, and then let's build some crappy ships. Let's design, or we can modify an existing design however we want to do it.
Okay.
We can build maybe like a destroyer or something like that.
Yeah.
Okay.
You just slap on some weapons. What do you want to slap? I mean, slap on like a... Actually, let's do graviton beams because we can show off the beam effect.
Yeah, yeah. Continuous on those guys. Graviton.
Yeah. And then we'll just max it out.
Oh. Uh-oh.
All right, and that was the Vecma, I think?
Yeah, Vecma and
so
the vodka.
Build a whole bunch of those.
Build a couple of vodkas.
Yeah, and don't worry. Keep maxing it out because you're going to win. Don't you worry.
Okay.
You'll worry. You will win with this design.
Okay. So I'm going to hit start. And I'm going to just hit – should I hit auto or should I try and do it myself?
Just try and do it yourself because I think auto has a glitch and I'd rather have
So all those fancy shields you have, they don't work in nebulas.
I forgot that we were in a nebula. Yeah, we don't have hard shields.
Oh, that's one of the big advantages of ion cannons. Also, don't work in a nebula.
Oh, really?
See, beam weapons. Yeah, because ions are also a little effective against shields.
So one of the big things. Oh, actually, you still have some weapons left over on that other ship.
Yeah, you can actually fire on another ship. with the one in the middle there. Yeah.
How do I know that? How can
Because it leaves the count left over.
Yeah, so you look at your count. One ion cannon, one laser. If you're out of weapons, they'll all register zero.
Oh.
And you still got a laser beam.
Still have a laser beam left.
Well, you also don't have to actually click on it. When it's yellow, that's actually setting it for Overwatch. So if you hit end turn, it will actually snipe if it's a smaller weapon.
Oh, that's what it is.
Or do reaction.
So actually, yeah. So actually in this, you can literally not select anything, and it will just fire everything that it can until the ship blows up. Once it blows up, if it has extra weapons left, you can just fire again, essentially. Yeah.
Oh, that's how that works.
But heavy mount and spinal mount weapons, though, they don't have Overwatch. So it's a reason to encourage you to want to use smaller weapons.
That AI's killing me. I'm going to give Vu so much grief tomorrow.
Yeah.
I haven't seen it. Yeah, it's something with the AI.
This is the first time in actually a long time that the AI has been doing this. I'm sure you hear that from everybody who's had dogs, but legitimately, like...
It has to be the latest change he made.
It's got it. Yeah. I mean, we really did a lot of... pulling stuff apart and re-putting it back together.
If you
double click
earlier, Brian,
I was show off the cinematic camera. If you middle mouse click on a ship or double click, mouse wheel out, and you can and you can use left mouse. See,
that's not.
And you can press G to turn off the grid.
Oh, I kind of like the grid. And I like how you can just right-click and it takes you back.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
So the plan when we were talking about doing a cinematic camera would be a lot like XCOM, the recent Firaxis one. So maybe something that players can turn off in that menu. We would add it there. And also try turning on the firing arcs too. Just kind of – in menu there's the little tab. So go menu, click on show firing arcs. Yeah, the little button.
Oh,
that'll kind of tell players too, like when you have forward firing only weapons, kind of what that actually looks like on your ship.
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
And then when you saw with the right click, you can actually hold down the mouse button and you can target subsystems on the bad guys too.
What?
It has I believe it's either left click and you hold it down, or is it right click? I actually can't remember.
I think it's left click
and you just kind of hold it down for a bit and you get a
radio. But I don't think it's going to work because it's still stuck in AI turn. Go ahead.
Yeah, it's stuck in AI turn, so it's probably is broken.
Oh, man. That's killing me. It's so funny. We did all this stuff for new game today, and I was like, oh, yeah, Brian had this one error with auto. See if he can fix this. All right, guys. 6 hours today debugging. He finally figured out like what the pattern was because it was such a random pattern. He's like, I don't understand like what triggers this. And then, of course, he came up with the fix. He pushed it, and he goes, okay, this should be good. And then he goes, well, I just noticed it is having this thing where it seems to be glitching out. He's like, but it's not consistent. It should be okay to show. It may happen maybe once or twice. And I love how now it's happening almost every damn time.
So are we going to show off a bit of the main game, too? Or?
Yeah. I just wanted to, you know, people love combat.
Let's do one more round, and let's show off that subsystem.
Yeah, that's what I was going for. So
just go ahead, hit that menu button again, and then you can go ahead and enter a system.
Oh, I don't want to Nebula, because those
you don't want a Nebula?
sweet guns I made won't work.
Oh, yeah, pick a toxic planet because they have like lightning storms. It's
damn, really? Okay.
Galaxy mode, move your camera behind the toxic planet.
I don't know how to how do you find a toxic
planet? Go back to the system you were in.
Shar?
Yeah. Shar. Just move the camera around by clicking the mouse. See, that's a toxic. So click left click. Yeah. And then you see that big kind of Venus-looking one, or that little one that you had the mouse over?
The one to the right. The yellow.
Oh!
Okay. That's a toxic one. So if you go to the night side of it, you can also see it in combat mode.
So go ahead and hit cancel. Drop out of the setup screen here. And then click and pan the camera.
drag the camera to its night
side.
See that? Yeah.
I do see that. I like it. Very atmospheric.
Yeah, that took a little while for me to get that pixel shader right.
Okay, so let's add some glaciers, some Vecmas, some vodkas.
I want a vodka Vecma.
Okay, and we're going to start now. Okay, so now I'm in. Okay, so now I can do this. Okay. Oh, geez. Okay, and then.
Yeah.
And then hold down the left mouse button.
So no,
I think you have to have a ship selected.
So right click. Go back to your fleet.
Okay.
And then, once you have one of your ships selected.
Yeah.
Move your mouse over one of their ships and hold down. Don't just click it, but hold it down.
So
we got some render order stuff we got to fix there.
Yeah, but you can actually choose like their computer.
Yeah, so click on computer. So you get a 2-hit penalty, but those ion cannons and lasers are now targeting the computer. So any damage to those. They're targeting, but they're going to. And of course, here. So this lets you target things like subsystems.
That was pretty cool.
So you can take out the engines of a ship.
The shield.
Apparently, I can only select one of them.
We gotta start yelling at people to get that fixed then.
Yeah. Okay.
Let's see what happens with Autumn. Or. So we do actually have separate AIs for the humans and for the Catraxi. So they actually do behave slightly differently. The Catraxi tend to do things like kamikazing a lot.
So if their ships are really weak and they don't think they can win, they're just going to go kamikaze. And if you notice, too, the little chunks floating around, there's actually specialized debris for the ships.
Oh, really?
So when the ships are blown up, if you zoom in on those debris chunks...
Hey, it worked. I think.
It froze on your turn. Yeah.
So how many different races are you going to have in here? Just the two, or?
No. So ultimately, there will be 10 playable species and 12 species total.
Oh.
So you'll have your players can play the 10 primary races, and then they'll have the Arcturans and the Rigellans, which they can't play, but they can interact with them.
I see. So let's see. Difficulty.
You might want to play with a legendary galaxy. So click on the size icon. Gigantic legendary. I think it should spawn correctly. I hope they fix the homeworld spawn rules.
It should work, yeah. It should.
And you can play with anomalies and add more nebulas and wormholes and such by clicking on that.
Oh, okay. So let's see. Okay, cool. I like how you have different diplomatic victory conditions, diplomatic and research, which is nice. I always enjoy having that kind of variety. Now, I see minor species here. How does that work in the game?
So minor species, these guys don't have FTL technology. So they're all basically like pre-warp societies with tech levels ranging from like being hunter-gatherers all the way up to basically like our level of technology. So these are guys that they don't have FTL. You can encounter them, and they'll tend to be on places that might have like strategic resources. And strategic resources are things that you need for like super weapons or megastructures. So Dyson spheres, planet killers, star killers, those sorts of things will require these resources. So when you bump into minor species, you may want to do almost like a prime directive type thing, like protect them. And that means you may not get the strategic resource. Other species may be like, hey, I need to get this sort of material so I can start building death rays to start wiping planets out. And so conquering minor species or subjugating them might make sense.
Right. Okay.
And the other cool thing you can do with them, too, is like, you can conquer them, take them over to like get resources. But also too, with the diplomatic victory, you can use them as a way to like expand your influence in the Galactic Council. Because you're gonna have more control over population. Players kind of have a variety of choices, in terms of how they want to interact with stuff. Because like the minor species in games like Civilization, they're kind of nifty, they're kind of useful. But ultimately, you can ignore them, you can conquer them. Especially late game when you have enough control. And we're trying to make minor species in this game actually something that presents the player with a series of choices that actually have tangible results.
Oh, good.
Minor species tend to end up being really minor. most games, like, they just don't seem to serve much of a purpose.
Well, it would be interesting. I don't think I've ever seen a game where a minor species, whenever a major dies off or something, like the minor could actually kind of take over or you know, ascend up out of minorness into an power mid-game or something.
Well, one thing we've been talking about, too, with the minor species is that you can give them FTL technology. So you could uplift them. They would inherit the fleet of your species. So that could be something that could blow back, right? You could bump into a species that has really high reproduction rate, and they're really good at ground combat, and let's give them FTL because we're losing a war. And they could wind up basically becoming a major, bigger threat than what you already had, potentially. It's something that we need to do testing to play out. And art-wise, they would be inheriting your fleets because you've given them your technologies.
Ah, very cool.
Have you ever read the book, The Moat in God's Eye?
Yeah, so basically it would be like the Modi setup, yeah.
Yeah, because I was just thinking, like, there hasn't been anybody in one of these games that's made a you know, because it's like you have reproduction rate on these races, right? Which is usually a good thing, right? Like, I want the guy with the high reproduction rate because then I make a colony and whatever. But what if the reproduction rate doesn't stop? You know, like they're going to run out and then they become super discontent or something, or, you know, just destroy themselves or whatever. So
we already kind of have that with one of our species, the Tharn, which hopefully if the species select menu loads up...
You know what? Exit out real quick. This may be a. This is just going to cancel. It's just the object carrying over thing, Adam. It's switching back between skirmish. There's some permanent objects that stay static in memory that don't need to be. That's what that is.
Oh.
I know exactly what that bug is. It's one of those low priority things for us to fix because while it is annoying when you're showcasing it. It's one of those things where it's like I would rather get an economic system working, knowing that if I just hit the new, if I can just exit and get back in, it'll
What is 1996 mode?
So we just did an article, or actually, no, that's coming this week. Yes,
isn't it'll come Saturday. Yeah.
Yeah. So Saturday on our website, we will talk about it. All I'm gonna say, because obviously we have to get website traffic, right? Is so if you remember BioShock Infinite and it has a certain mode that's also named after a year, we're basically doing the same thing for this. The AI will cheat. It will backstab you. You have one life. It's Iron Man mode. This is not meant to be fair. It's meant for bragging rights only. Mostly because it's sort of like when going through difficulty modes, like I might as well, you know, somebody's gonna whine the game is too easy. Or that the game cheats or something. It's like, I'm going to give you exactly what you want. A full-blown cheating mode that has Iron Man and no one will win. There'll be people that will win it, obviously.
Oh, see, because I thought, like, 1996 mode would be like the minor races get together, form a boy band, you know.
Call themselves Space Sync.
Yeah, that sounds good. Yeah, we should have that.
So it'd be the Backspace Boys.
There'll be a Day Zero DLC.
You're kidding me.
No, we're not doing
that. No, I'm watching the screen. And
thinking,
Oh, no.
Again.
OMG. So
let's try smaller galaxy
stuff.
Yeah,
style. Yeah.
That's what it is. It's not meeting the placement rules.
Yeah, and they didn't fix it.
Well, they're busy folks, fixing buildings.
I know. They're busy fixing other stuff.
Folks, now we're not only playing a game and test it, we're also helping them fix bugs.
So, yeah.
We do it all here on the Space Game. We help with...
You're the ones who wanted a demo.
And we love it. I love it.
Hit a new game. Go to Legendary.
No. Just use... Go back to Large. There you go. Large, and then you do a cluster or a spiral. It's up to you. This should work unless this crazy bug just got introduced.
If it doesn't work, then...
Yay!
There we go. Oh, my God.
On the really large ones, it's trying to spawn too many homeworlds, and it's having a problem.
Oh.
So if you click on Tharn... This is sort of like the Modis, right? They have this really high growth rate. They also eat people, and that gives them morale bonuses and such. But they're really, really, really terrible at research.
Yeah, I would never pick them because I'm always about the research, like always.
Well, the interesting thing with them, and I do want to try them once we get them fully implemented, is I like the idea that they have a horde mentality. So essentially, they breed really fast, and if you can build enough guys, you just kind of rapidly expand, grab technology from systems that you've taken, and then you kind of move on. So.
I also like the custom thing.
Mm.
I like that because I'm gonna choose a couple. Let's see.
Yeah, we don't have any tooltips implemented. Just as a warning, but those will break down like exactly what does cloners do or what are the bonuses from government types and things like that.
Yeah.
We have a few traits here that are actually not used by the main species in the game. They're kind of here for fun. Like the one you just selected, Assimilator, basically lets you play the Borg. So if you pick Cybernetic and Assimilator, what happens is when you take over a planet in ground combat, the plan of this trait is they'll be, instead of like they join your culture and you know they'll be members of the other species, but they're now part of your empire. What Assimilator does is that population reduces and they get converted into your species.
Huh. Okay.
Early on when we were bouncing ideas around, we were thinking about maybe even the Xantus or Shapeshifters using it. They'd be like the Thing from the movie The Thing. But that seemed a little too extreme. Like they're spies, they're perfect shapeshifters, and then they touch you and you get turned into one of them. It seemed a little overkill.
Right. All right, I'm accepting that shit.
No, what would be super horrific? What
amazing bugs you can find now.
if you had a random event in the game where like somebody encounters a species that's like the Thing, and then the whole damn race just gets taken over with it.
We have a Grand Menace that is plant. Whoa, negative 2,000. Wow,
that's because no research has been selected yet.
Okay,
and the game doesn't understand just yet how to handle that. So
none of those are working yet.
So if you hit H,
and it'll go to your homeworld.
Oh,
So it says none because I think you picked the exile trait. We right now we're giving them a homeworld, but the synth, the robotic species, they start the game actually without a homeworld. They'll start the game with a fleet.
Oh.
So they are exiles from another galaxy. They got kicked out by the organics, and they are trying to find their own home to call their own. They want to be left alone by the other species and kind of just stick to science and being the best machines that the universe has ever seen.
Right. Oh, I can't build diddly shit.
Nope.
Yeah, you have to research stuff.
So you'll hit cancel and system. And you just go ahead and hit intern.
And since you picked a species we don't have art for yet.
Brian, I have to like get you braced for disappointment here. Nedry's gone.
Oh,
I know. Yeah, he'll be missed. I have to explain that. So in one of the most hilarious pieces of placeholder art that I've ever seen,
you would build a
building and it was actually Nedry from Jurassic Park
what
would show up.
What happened to intern? How did that break?
I'm betting intern broke because we're in custom.
Okay. Or because he was in system view when he entered the research screen.
Let's start a new game. I bet you it has to do with custom.
Okay.
I bet there's a trait wigging out because we're just trying to get the primaries implemented. So just try like human or something.
Yeah, that's exactly what I did.
Humans are superior.
Yeah.
I really like how you have the representation of the planet. I kind of miss that. You know, in other games. Okay, where the hell are we? There we are.
H.
Yeah, there's no name on the system.
No, hit H.
I did.
Okay. Quit the game, restart. It's static data that's still holding over.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Static data. So what's happening with some of our data is it's being held into memory permanently and it's not being cleared. So even though you've started a new game, it's still holding that data in memory and trying to pull from it. You know, this just feels like one, like, you know, you take your kids out someplace nice and they're just misbehaving like hell. You're just like, really? You're so good at home, child. Yeah. Take you out. It's like, this is why we can't have nice things. You know? This should be good. You'll click on humans. That should go. Humans, yeah.
All right. Yay. So how far along would you say this is? It's, I know pre-alpha, but how much, like, do you have an estimate?
So we are hoping for, oh, there's a planet. See, it's so wonderful. There's Sol. Hoping for June 2016.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So a lot of the stuff, it seems really broke, but a lot of it actually is pretty simple, stupid fixes. So, of course, you can't really build anything just yet. so you just want to go ahead and hit, enter. All of a sudden, the research is going to pop up. And this time, it'll be a dude.
Hey, it's Shepard Book.
Yeah.
Yay. There's our dude. You actually recognized.
Yeah. So then you'll want to, and then you'll go ahead and just start researching.
Hit enter a couple of times.
Oh, okay.
Well, actually, to expedite this, go back to your planet.
Go back to your colony. Assign some people to research.
Oh, I see.
There we go. Yeah, take some guys off of farming. This is an interstellar. Whoa.
Actually, I would just take them off industry.
Yeah. You don't need anybody building housing.
Yeah, put them down there. Stupid. There you go. Go on.
I see how it works. Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. Now, is there a way, like, I don't remember which game did this. It might have been Master of Orion, where you hit end turn, and then if nothing happens that turn, it just keeps going until something happens.
And then we will be doing something like that, but right now we're trying to test like every last little thing.
Right, so, of course. I love that kind of feature. So.
Yes, mm-hmm. but there will be something just like that.
Yeah. Oh my god, that negative number.
Okay, yeah, because he's done.
Yeah, yeah.
So then you can go click on like let's do like hydroponic farm, we'll start
trying. James spent like a good chunk of the day putting in the early concept art as the temporary sprite.
Yeah, so if you go to research lab,
just hit confirm. There you go.
And then let's slide.
And it'll be done in a turn. Oh, 20. Whoa, that's interesting. It said one turn by default.
Yeah, what's happening is the system is actually using the last piece of data it had rather than updating on the fly.
Wow, that's a lot of housing that he built.
Yeah. Well, housing's quick to build.
It's the Vancouver, Canada housing.
Oh, hydroponic farm.
Ooh, okay. Now people can actually eat food. If you maybe you can also research fuel cells and such, that can help you. Okay, research lab. Oh, it still's got a turn left, it looks like. Yeah, add a farm out next on the queue.
Okay, this is cool. I'm enjoying it. That is a lot of housing. It actually
builds the lab.
That is a lot of housing. Holy crap. Yeah.
Give it one. Yeah. We'll go for one more turn. It should plop a lab down. There's a rounding error that it has. Not a rounding error, but it doesn't account for rounding. Yep.
Yay. Got a lab.
There's a couple hours of my hard earned day to day spent on that one. Okay. So what we'll do is, let's go back to your colony.
Okay. Oh, hang on.
You research stuff. Okay, so if we go back to your colony, let's go to build, and let's... Okay, you've already built... Okay. And also, by the way, yes, you did build a hydroponic farm and a research lab. It just doesn't clear off the list yet, but they are built. Let's build a colony ship. Let's expand your colony. So let's... Yep. And then go ahead and confirm. That'll take you 34 turns. And you can slide some guys around. And one thing that this game definitely punishes you for more than Master of Orion 2 is notice how you move the one guy and you went to plus zero, but you moved into industry and you actually lost even more.
I know.
It takes pollution into account a lot more.
Oh.
Because one thing that we felt that games like Master of Orion 2 and a lot of other forest games that take out pollution. Not that trying to like eco-friendly Washingtonians or anything like that. But the idea is you just can't like rape and exploit your planet and not imagine something like a Praxis from Star Trek VI happening, which is a potential in this game. We will actually add that. So yeah. If you have like an ultra rich planet that you're just mining, not even caring what you're doing, at some point, like Mewtwo would just be like, oh, you've went from ultra rich to rich. That's too bad for you. But in Lord of Rigel, it'll actually lose a climate level or potentially even explode. if you're over.
You'll have plenty of warning if your planet's going to explode. Yeah. Like you could take an Earth-like planet, and it'll be like really nasty looking, and you'll know. It's not going to be like a certain game where your homeworld could be wiped out in the third turn by poison clouds.
Right.
I won't say what game that is.
Oh, dude, because I'm like, what the
hell? Wait, no, go ahead. Which game?
One? For the Stars!
What game?
Really, I've never had that happen.
Oh.
That happens to me a lot.
I actually need to play that game more. I've actually never really played the original.
The original I really enjoy.
Anyway, okay, so where are we?
But there's a lot of stuff where we want to ensure that there's player feedback so you don't get frustrated. And that when something like that happens, it feels like more of a, oh, it's cool, more than a being outright punished, right?
Right.
It's one of those things, and playtesting, of course, all these things sound cool in theory, but you got to play them. I mean, ultimately, that's what it all comes down to. If it doesn't play fun, then no one's going to play. You know, who cares what the concept is? So, and that's one thing we're really focused on with just our company and with our products is really trying to make a game that's fun. That's the whole point of the game. If you don't feel rewarded, then you're not going to play the game. Yep, there you go. So there's your call on the ship.
Got a ship?
And then you can go ahead and select another star system.
Yep. There should be a couple in range.
Okay, I'm going.
All right.
Bonk, bonk.
And then you should be able to...
Can you colonize? I haven't actually been able to colonize yet. This is exciting for me. Every time I've tried this system, it hasn't worked.
Yeah, I actually colonized a couple times today because buildings were working. Like, oh,
hey, probably on the desert planet, Terra Nova Prime. Actually, also, this is like perfect too because he went from Sol to Terra Nova, and it just Terra Nova.
Hello, heavy gear. Hello.
Which is the probability. Like, we got, I think I have something like 4,000 star system names in the database.
The Unqualified Gamer on YouTube is asking if this is early access. Oh, God, yes. Oh, God.
So early that this is, it's fetal access.
Yeah, this is like unobtainable. It's not for sale. There's a distinction.
Let's just put it like this. This was me panicking last night when Brian said, oh, yeah, hey, let's show the game off. Because I'm like, are you kidding me? Like, I haven't shown the game off yet.
I'm so sorry. I thought you knew that.
No. It's totally cool. No. I'm just expressing to the viewer. So, I mean, for us, I don't think this is quite showable yet. This is, but it kind of gives people an idea. And like Brian said, and I agree, you know, people like seeing the sausage being made.
Oh, yeah.
They like the sausage.
Yeah, you know, people love their sausage. So this will kind of just
please,
give you an idea of
do
where
not
we're
send
at.
Us pictures of the sausage because
do not send pictures. Yes, don't do that. That's a no bueno. But yeah, and then you can build all sorts. Right now, it pops up that you've researched everything, but you actually haven't. You're actually only researching what you've selected.
Right.
Those are just little tweaks we still need to make to that.
Right. Okay, so let's see.
Yeah, I got Terra Nova now.
I know. So,
but it didn't show, it doesn't give it the name yet.
Yeah, it's not showing the name.
Okay.
That's actually literally new from like 2 hours ago.
Where is my planet? Where are you? There you are.
One of the things we just got the art done is the indicator to show what planets are actually colonized. So it'll be a little 3D indicator. Kind of like the Sims, little diamonds that the Sims have.
Oh.
We were prototyping a lot of different ways of showing it. Like, one idea was doing something like Mass Effect, but that doesn't work with a full 3D camera. So this is the more finalized ship designer that I actually finished up some last tweaks on last night. So you can see this one acts a little smoother than the one you were playing with.
It does, actually.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'm supposed to be able to select every.
Yeah, you're not supposed to be able to select the ultimate chip drive.
This isn't even like hooked up to the tech tree yet.
Yeah. Okay, I was about to say.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Can check out all the different shield technologies.
Yeah.
Organic armor. Oh, I love it.
Yeah, it's gluten free. Its name was Colin.
He was such an asshole.
And then if you actually click on the ship or click on the view now, click so that should view, be clearer now too. Like,
that's so much
this
better.
This is what we were talking about. It shows all the statistics.
Yeah.
So it tells you that it has three decks. There's between 18 to 20 people, possibly 21 if they've been in space far too long.
Yeah.
Oh, the unqualified gamer says, I mean, also when you do this and show it off, meaning your game, showing to the community that you actually care about your game, unlike some developers. So this is pretty good.
Well, I'm glad that you feel that way. It certainly makes me extremely nervous. You know, it's one of those things where there's so...
Yeah, you can see there's some issues here with the tech filtering.
Yeah,
it's... everything it's that it's not propagated yet, because none of the mods are researched yet. So, but the tech you do have is a laser, so...
Oh, okay.
You know, it's one of those things where it's just, I don't like showing things in an unfinished state. Like, to me, I worry about, and, you know, the gaming community's gone to this. I'm a gamer myself, so I empathize with this. There's been so many half-complete games, you know, that have been not only half-complete on development, obviously, but half-complete when they're released.
Oh, yeah, no, there have been so many... either incomplete 4X games or just mediocre, like uninspired.
Yeah, and that's always my worry is that if we're showing something off early, that people will, you know, people are quick to judge. And I don't want people to say like, we'll see this don't work. Obviously, idiots. Moving on.
Idiots.
Yeah, like, and I just, you know, that's always my big worry, but I'm glad that people are responding
positively. Did it build a Kiev or did it just build a colony ship?
It did build a colony ship.
So go back. Yeah, let's go back real quick. Let's go look at that.
Let's try to build another Kiev class.
Okay, 8 turns.
And it's saying hydroponic farm.
Yeah, because it's...
Oh,
it's,
so it's saving old data, not...
It's doing those things, like, which is fine. No. That I know about.
Okay.
Yeah, that I know about. We just didn't have time today. It really didn't help when Vu spent something like 7 hours trying to find an auto bug. That just ended up leading to... Oh, there we go. I like that one.
Oh, this one's time it actually saved, though. Maybe it's when it actually...
There's only one planet here.
Yep, there's just the one.
The one. Colonize it.
Sometimes you hit a crap system, sometimes you hit gold.
Yeah, there you go. Well, at least your people won't starve to death.
Yeah. No, that's important.
And also,
hit the buy button.
Frigates, or you can build freighters too. So if you go back to your home system,
okay.
After you
build 8 out of 8 freighters, so it looks like he's got some freighters right now. Oh no, that's command points.
That's zero.
No, he has no freighters. Yeah.
Yeah. So if you want to go back to your home colony.
Oh, the turn button froze.
Oh, game froze.
Oh, it might have been trying to. Huh? There's a lot of things that could be causing that right now.
No, it doesn't work yet. GUI's there for it. Doesn't work. We need to hook it all up still.
Oh, it quit the whole game. Oh, whoops.
You did tell it quit game.
I did. Whoops. Sorry, guys. Sorry.
That one is not a bug, I can assure you.
No, that one did what it was supposed to do.
Yeah.
Oh, God. That one did what it was supposed to do. Okay. Oh, but I like how this... Wait, does continue do anything?
It
might.
Might.
Click on it.
I don't think autosave is there yet.
Let's see what happens.
Let's see what happens. I like this.
Supposed to be a ship at warp.
Send me a screensaver just of that. I just want... okay, so wait. Oh, so we got something. Okay.
Nope, it's saving data from some other game. Nope.
Yeah, it's mixing a bunch of different data.
Okay.
So click new game, or oh no, that's gonna quit the whole game.
I
no,
know. I wanted
no, no,
to.
No. It's fine. It's actually better this way.
Yeah, it is.
There's no
I wanted to clear out the data that's hanging on for dear
life. Yeah, yeah, fair enough.
I like how it's got like familiar sensibilities, but trying something a little new and different at the same time. Because so many here's the problem I have with a lot of 4X games. I love 4X games, I do, but they all try and they either try and be Master of Orion, and that's a fine line to walk, because you're either trying to be a classic game that everyone feels is the pinnacle of the genre, but add like one or two things to it to make it your own. Or you have games like Sword of the Stars or Distant Worlds that just say, fuck that, we're doing our own goddamn thing.
Yeah.
Which is nice. Now, you guys are going the other route, but you're adding enough to it that it feels fresh enough, which I like. At least that's what I'm seeing so far.
Yeah, that's really what we're trying for, is that we're really trying to build a franchise off of this. That's kind of the long-term goal. Right. So, of course, we're going to build a core Lord of Orion. Like, you know, it's our feeling that Master of Orion 2, as you point out, obviously did a lot right. It is the granddaddy of 4X games. So what we wanted to do was build a core game that paid homage to Master of Orion, but added and fixed a lot of things that Master of Orion wasn't able to handle correctly. So looking at things like espionage, menaces, tactical combat needed a lot of improvement. And we have some things that we think should help with that. And just looking in diplomatic aspects, yes, I'm just reading some of the comments here. And we can get diplomacy, too, and we talked about it at the beginning. So diplomacy will be a lot different. The players will actually be in a universe where you're actually dealing with not only 10 other species that are kind of equal in tech, but you're also going to have elder species that are engaged in a Cold War. So players can kind of choose to go a variety of routes. They can choose to go it alone. They can choose to join one of the two elder species. It's kind of up to them. Mm-hmm. But that should kind of give players a lot of choice in diplomacy. But players can also choose to have a research victory and kind of research their way out of things. They can choose a military victory. It's really kind of up to the player. And that was kind of a limitation in Master of Orion, was that that's also really odd that it's not clearing the menu out.
Yeah, that's been there on our ticket list for a while.
Someone in the chat asked, the YouTube chat asked what the races are, so I thought I would just show
them. Yeah, this is perfect. So you can kind of show through. So we have, obviously, every game has humans. So you always have your wonderful humans.
And you always have the cat people. Gotta have the cat people.
One game that did not have humans in it, and that was...
Was that Sword of the Stars? Ascendancy. I'm covering that in a couple of weeks, actually. I haven't played Ascendancy in so fucking long. I'm really looking forward to revisiting that motherfucking game.
So you have kind of your Catraxi, which you can read about here. And then the cool thing with them is they're kind of like a mix of like the Karathi and Klingons and kind of like a Japanese culture.
Since you've already dropped the Modis, Niven's Zin are also a huge influence, being the granddaddy of course, the Korath.
Of course. Yeah, the Kazin, obviously.
And crazy logic, dude, like, if we don't answer your question, by the time we're talking about species, yell at us, because I actually really do want to answer your question. It's a fantastic question. I actually wrote an article about it, I think, last week, getting into the real-time aspect, and I think that's something definitely worth getting into. If you look at the Tharn, for instance, if we click on them, like, you have your Tharn, which are like your dinosaur-like species. And think of them almost as like Hordish orcs or like the Gorn. So essentially, they're supposed to look like the Gorn in a way, but kind of dinosaur-like. But in terms of how they play, they really should play as fantastic warriors and terrible at everything else. So essentially, you're constantly just building this horde up to advance and gain more territory because you can't produce very quickly and you're not a great researcher. But you're really good at fighting and reproducing.
And the other thing that they're really good at is when you conquer like a new planet, they start eating the colonists. And that gives them a little V in there. So if you take over like a homeworld, what you want to do is use your freighter fleet to actually move captive population back to your homeworld and your big industrial worlds. Because they're going to have, because of population growth and stuff, they're going to be getting these big morale penalties. So to keep your people happy, you're going to always have to move this front line of crappy ships, and you're going to be raiding colonies, hopefully taking them over with ground forces, and trying to use that to basically funnel slaves back home.
That would be funny, like
if
one of their special attacks is they just drop like burger joints on your planet from orbit. And it's like we're ready to process you. By the way, I do not miss... For a second,
another thing with
I know I see what you did on the Tharn.
Which flag?
Yeah, I've seen V.
Okay, good. You actually been recognizing all the right stuff. So another thing too is with the Tharn, the females are the really big bulky ones, and the males are the really scrawny guys.
Oh, like a lot of lizards.
Yeah, so if we anybody feels that our game is objectifying, we'll just be like, well, look at our big, sexy lizard women.
Yes.
We have a couple of questions from the chat. First, is there going to be multiplayer?
There will not be multiplayer, and I kind of heard him haws about that one in the past. And really,
I love it. I'm fine with it. I'm on board.
I know. It's so many people are. So kind of what our thought process is it's not our goal for the core of Lord of Rigel to have
Solaire guys
multiplayer. No. If we do anything, it will probably be a Kickstarter stretch goal. So it's one of those things that, again, if people show sufficient interest, it's something we can do. And we've certainly been responsive, I think, to people's comments in the past. And that's not to say that it's an open door, obviously, that, oh yeah, just email us with whatever idea you have, we'll get it implemented in the game. But we certainly look at boards, look at chats like these, and try to gauge people's feedback. And sometimes people just have absolutely fantastic ideas or raise even better points about what is it that, this seems to potentially cause this problem. You know, have you thought about this? And so, like ground combat, someone asked a question about ground combat. That actually spurred a big conversation between our 3D modeler and myself. And we ended up actually altering a few things in ground combat because of that question raised by a person on one of our boards. It was just fantastic. I can't see all the questions.
Well, I'll tell them to you.
Okay, go for it, man.
What is one of the reasonings against real time in games like this today? What do you think is one of the reasons?
Which is
weird because there have been some great real time 4Xs recently, like Distant Worlds and Star Ruler 2.
So, I'd say that there's more real time 4X games currently than there are turn based. Because that was actually when we first sat down to make this. We were looking at things like Distant Worlds, Sword of the Stars. And definitely Endless Space, which has a real-time system based on cards. And basically going like, nobody's really done a turn-based tactical 4X. And looking at games like the new XCOM, turn-based can be done right. It can be done well and acceptable with modern audiences. So why not do that? There seems to be a need for that.
But I also think too, it goes a little beyond, I guess, what the demographics are for games and audiences out there. I think there's a fundamental issue about game pacing and about when you're doing game mechanics for a real time versus doing game mechanics for a turn based. So real time, obviously your biggest problem with real time is time. You can only do so much in a certain window of time, right? Sure. So for us, it was a design compromise in terms of what we wanted to do. So we wanted to have a really deep and involved tactical combat. If I'm throwing out a ton of ships out there, I can't micromanage and control them in a real-time session. there's only so much I can do. At some point, I'm going to simply run out of time. What we really thought players would enjoy and what we would enjoy would be something where you have a complex turn-based system that rewards you for a variety of things. So, for instance, you can have individual ships do flanking maneuvers, which we're going to be adding on to the game later. We're going to be doing stuff like you kind of got to see a little bit of it with subsystem targeting. So potentially one of the ideas would be is that you could take you could build fleet combinations of larger and smaller ships, use your smaller ships to move around the rear, and in this game we actually remove 10% of armor from the rear of a ship so that ships can be vulnerable from the rear so that smaller ships can flank and attack from behind. You can use your small ships like frigates and destroyers to act kind of like scalpels and disable large capital ships. Those kind of maneuvers can be really difficult to do in a turn-based realm, or not turn-based, excuse me, real-time realm. Right. Because at some point, you either do one of two things. Either you simply choose not to use those features, which I guess the question then becomes, why did you even put them in the game to begin with? Or the other issue becomes you start making kind of choices about like, well, I can implement some of the stuff, I can't do this other stuff. So it's, for us, the idea was, or not, the other point of it is also some games try to compensate by having like the Total War games. They have like timers. You can accelerate and decelerate time.
Right.
But it's really not real time anymore. Right? It's really just you accelerating the clock up and down, pausing, all that stuff. So you kind of end up fighting time even more. And that's kind of counter to what the core game is, right? The core game's turn-based. You can take your time. Real time's hard to do in a 1,024-star galaxy, which is what our legendary galaxy is.
Yeah.
Imagine trying to scale it. Like, real time doesn't scale large. Real time is great for things that are small. And so those are kind of some of the reasons. Is there a perfect game? Do I hate real time? Absolutely not. It's just for the intense, like, kind of the feature set that we were wanting to go for in Lord of Rigel. Turn-based just kind of worked a little better. It scaled a little easier. It presents challenges because you do want to keep the player engaged. You don't want to have it to where if you have these mega ship battles, that you're having to, you can literally, like, I know in Master of Orion 2, I could literally walk away from my computer for 5 minutes, come back, and the AI is still having its turn with its 50, 60, 70 ship fleet. Yeah. So we've introduced some mechanics that we think are going to really help that, like capping the number of ships on screen at one time. You can still build ships with 100 or have a 100 ship fleet, but you'll call them in like reinforcements, just like you would in the Total War games. Right? Oh. Only so much is on the field. So the idea is that turns will pace themselves out a lot faster when you're only dealing with a max of 72 ships for both sides versus dealing with a max of a couple hundred ships. So there's some stuff, and of course playtesting will see what playtesting does, but so far I'm pretty pleased with how turn-based paces itself, and it matches what the core game is doing with turn-based. So.
Well, here's an interesting thing, because the same person who asked about the real-time bias said turn-based seems like a step back. Look at JRPGs, he said. I'm thinking turn-based is a tried and true and well-tested design methodology that works for a wide variety of game types.
Yes, and I think you have to look at, people say, well, real time's modern, more advanced, and I think that's really not the best way to look at it. I think you have to look at real time and turn based as different tools for different jobs. It really depends on what feature set you're going for and what feeling that you're going for, right? Kind of put it in like mechanic terms, right? It's kind of like saying that like 15 years ago, people thought diesel engines were crap, right? They're old, they're just good for Mack trucks, and they're terrible on emissions and all that stuff. And now you're going to see a resurgence of that. They're very good for certain things, just like gas engines are good for certain things. And that's kind of how I see turn-based in real-time, is that...
No, that makes sense.
Real-time is good, I think, for a smaller scale. If anyone wants to play Lord of Rigel with 1,024 stars in real-time, that has any semblance of not being in slow-mo, I want to see it. because I think you would literally be stressed.
Yeah,
trying to leap from colony to colony. I mean, if a 1,024 stars, you think, okay, we'll divide that by 10 players. That's only 100. But each star has multiple planets, plus you're building fleets. So when you start adding that stuff up, it's like, how could you possibly have anything even remotely real-time that would allow the player to actually engage with the game in any level of depth?
Right.
At some point, it just doesn't scale correctly. I think if we had a game, let's say, maybe like 32 stars, I think that would play very well for a real-time game. I actually don't think that 4X is inherently anti-real-time or pro-turn-based or whatever. I think it's just a matter of scale and to keep it all consistent. Yes, real-time, we could make it work in a 32-star galaxy. But you have to
Make a turn-based first-person shooter now. I'm not joking. I'm actually literally thinking about like how can we make
kind
that
of
work
already
after
had
these
those
times.
With those like old Might and Magic RPGs.
Have you seen Super Hot?
Yes, and I was just thinking also like is that really what Fallout 3 is? I mean, everybody hits
that
so often. That really is a turn-based.
and Christian, sure. I was going to say this too. Christian in the YouTube chat says, what about Distant Worlds? And, well, yes. I mean, I don't know if that goes up to 1,000 star systems. It gets pretty big. But that game has automation. Most players who play Distant Worlds do not play it on fully manual because that's crazy. Like, you have guys like Scott Manley, I think that's his name, is who plays everything manually, and he's... I don't know how he does it, but I couldn't do that.
And that's the thing. Like, even for a player like myself, I wouldn't play on anything without some level of automation.
Yeah.
And I guess that raises the point. If I'm having the computer do everything, then what's the point of me even playing the game? What's the point of even having the feature if you're not going to actually use it? And we've kind of taken that approach to a lot of things when we've thought about not just like real-time and turn-based, but looking at things like ground combat, right? I think that's another area where we had a conversation about looking at why is it that people were dissatisfied with the system like Mutu had, for instance, with ground combat, right? Mm-hmm. And the simple thing was it was just kind of like a number crunching fest, right? You landed your troops. You knew if you were going to win, you could win by one troop, you could win by 100. It didn't matter. Ultimately, it just didn't reward the player, right? So one of the things that we thought, hey, here's a way that we can reward the player is and kind of maintain having a more simplistic ground combat is let's look at it so that depending on how well the player wins the battle, so let's say, for instance, the player has a sweeping victory of a colony, maybe the player could start getting rewarded with stolen technology and increase that rate versus if they just barely took the colony. Or what if, you know, I'm sure if you're occupying a planet or a region, if you only have a couple troops doing the occupation versus a lot of troops, you're going to have morale issues. So we've tried to add features that kind of reward the player for playing it smart and make that system more valuable, but not adding kind of unneeded complexity. There's some 4X games that have gotten into the point where that they've turned ground combat into another turn-based combat system, but our concern is that you're going to end up kind of fatiguing the player out. If you took a loaded up star system that had, let's say, 7 to 10 colonies,
right,
you would be looking at having one ship battle and one ground combat battle for every planet. That could be 14 battles or more to take one star system. Ultimately, you're going to hit the auto button at some point.
You know, I have
you're
to.
Just gonna
I have
like,
to.
You
admit,
know, I'm just. Done.
I am an auto guy.
So
you know, like. Just about any game that I play, it's kind of like I brought the ships I want to bring, and me being in there helping, it's like if the AI is as competent as it should be, then I'm actually going to be a detriment if I'm manually controlling my shit. So it should just be like, okay, I actually the way that Endless Space does it, I really liked. The actual ship building in Endless Space confuses the shit out of me because I don't know, you know, like, should I make a ship and put 1,000 guns, or do I put a missile on it? I have no idea, and the game doesn't really help me out with how to build an effective ship. But the deal with the combat is, okay, there's 3 phases, and it just happens, right? And it's kind of like I have a chance in the middle of the battle to say, okay, switch tactics, let's do something else, because this isn't working. But, you know, it's a thing where I don't have to, like, get in there and micro the ships around, right? Like, case in point, you mentioned – you didn't say Star Drive 2, but I heard you thinking it. But, you know, it's like I like Star
Damn Drive it, 2. Jim. I play Damn it.
Right? But the thing, like, the ground combat, man, I ought to resolve that shit, like, because I just don't want to see it, you know?
Yeah, I mean, and that was really frustrating too. And I bought Star Drive 2, and I was playing it, and I was just like, I'm the emperor of a star empire, and you have me boarding ships, worrying about moving my samurai bears.
Well, and I think the reason Dan did that though, if you look at the game, and there were some things that were kind of frustrating to me about like how freaking aggressive the AI is. Like, every I meet somebody and it's like, hello, come in peace. The battle fleet's on the way. You know? Like, right at the beginning of the game. And God forbid you run into the Chuck. You're just done, right? You don't want to hit the Chuck in the first third of the game because you're nowhere ready for it. And it's a thing of like, okay, so then he's got those crystal things attacking me. And what I figured out is right from the very beginning, because generally in these games, I want to try to build some infrastructure. I want to get my industry moving. I'm going to try to get some technology. Not when you play Star Drive. Star Drive has to be, I need to get factories fast. I need to get another colony fast and put some factories on it, and I need to start cranking out some ships. And then once I got enough ships that I can survive the first encounter that I have with anybody, then I can start worrying about technologies. Because then it becomes an arms race. But the reason why that he does that, though, is because he's very focused on the combat, and the ship design is the fun in the game. And then everything else is support for that. And once I got that mindset, I was like, okay, this is the game I'm playing, not the game that I thought that I was playing.
So one of the things that we're going to do, and we already got that. You saw that a little bit when you were playing Skirmish. You saw that the Catraxi just started to like run straight towards you and suicided the second they realized that they were totally outclassed. So we are basically setting up so every AI is going to have its own kind of goals and means and things like that. So every species is – they're not necessarily going to be smart. Going around saying, like, yes, our AI is going to be, like, the best thing ever is what everybody does. What we're going to do is make them internally consistent. So if you bump into the Tharn, you know that you're going to play that Star Drive 2 type game where you got to get, you know, soldiers ready, marine barracks. You need to get something to be able to shoot out those frigates and ships are going to swamp you with. You know that they're going to be sending in troop transports and they're going to try to steal your colonists. But if you bump into another species, say you bump into the Selak, who are our aquatic species, they're going to be trying to pop trade treaties and non-aggression pacts. And as long as you keep the trade treaties going, they have no reason to attack
you. So you have a race that plays like me, right? I just want to do business. I don't want to shoot at you, right? And I'm going to whip your ass with my economy. And, yeah.
But in the case of the Selak, if your economy starts doing too well or you start basically screwing them out of trade opportunities, then they're going to go full war footing and start bombing you because they fully believe in industrial military complex. But the idea is you'll know they'll be telling you when you know, they're angry at you because you blocked a trade treaty or you tried to embargo them and things like that. Other species like the Catraxi are all about shows of strength. So they are going to try to test you. They're going to poke your borders. And ideally, if you do build a big fleet and you prove that you can hold your own, they'll actually wind up being potentially loyal allies. And you'll ideally have enough feedback from the AI in diplomacy that you'll have a good idea of what's kind of going on and what they're sort of thinking.
But.
And one thing, too, I don't know if players have noticed this as Brian's been going around, is, you know, we all, you know, obviously managing an empire can get rather tedious. So if you look in the build menu, you'll see it doesn't work yet, but at the UI for it's there. You'll see where you can actually have this queue options. And so you can, the AI, you can kind of, the one of the things that we're going to do is allow players to either use an AI to auto-manage things, because not all players are into that aspect. They're kind of into the military or the broad strokes sort of thing.
Right.
But one of the other things that it'll allow you to do, too, and I run into this myself as a player, is I have a pretty standard build pattern that I have when I take over a fresh colony. I kind of know what things I want to build and what sequence. So players will actually be able to build a custom game sequence, name it, and just simply load it when they take over a new colony.
And yeah, so that load and save is where you can take your build cues and just be able to load it.
Oh. And the idea would be is that it would lower player fatigue in a big galaxy, because I know for me, late game, I absolutely hate taking new colonies. I'm tired of telling the game for the 50th time, this is the build sequence that I want, just like every other colony that I've built. You know, I go for industry, food, research, and, you know, defense. Like in my mind, I know my sequence of buildings. I know I want to build my deep core mines first, and that's going to let me get the strongest industry quick, and then move down from there. So we're hoping there's just some smart features like that that'll help reduce player fatigue, because a 1,024 star galaxy, it's going to be difficult. And as well, too, I really just hope it just caters, because some people really don't like micromanaging colonies. That's just not their thing. And so that kind of goes back to our strategy with Lord of Rigel, of trying to make a game that you can play it kind of however you want to. It'll kind of adapt to your play style a little bit. If you want to micromanage your colonies and go to every colony and see new buildings being built, you can do that, and the game will reward you for that. If you don't want to do that, you just want to say, hey, this is my build sequence, let's go, I've seen all the pretty planets, you can do that too, and you're not going to be, you know, it's not going to hurt you as a player for doing that. So that's just kind of some of the kind of the long range plans we have for single players, is adding those sorts of features to smooth out gameplay.
That's nice, because once empires start getting bigger and bigger, it's like, oh god, I have to manage this, huh? The late game and a lot of 4X is where I kind of start checking out, you know, because it's like, oh god, I have all these I have all these cities or planets. It's like, oh god, I just don't want to do this anymore. The exploration is the most fun to me. The discovery is the most fun to me. Now we have another question that I accidentally missed because the chat scrolled down, but I think you kind of answered it. Will there be a Cassius Belli system like in the EU games? It would be really cool to have something like that, or something like an intergalactic council. And I believe you did mention there's going to be an intergalactic council.
So this can address both the end game and that. So on Cassius Belli, we're basically going to keep it more simple, where you'll get feedback when war is going to happen. There's not going to be a case where you earn points and war score and things like that. Those are really complicated systems. Wars you can declare, but you'll of course be getting penalties if you break treaties and things like that, and they'll remember and not trust you. In terms of the end game, that really does tie into that sort of galactic council idea. So what we're doing, and we mentioned this before, we have the 10 playable species. We also have minor species, and we got the two elder races, the Rigelans and the Arcturans, who are locked in this Cold War. And these elder races are trying to basically convince everyone in the galaxy to go along with their way of thinking. And you have these formations of ideally these power blocks. And players can try to throw in their cards with either the Rigelans or the Arcturans, who are ideologically opposed to each other for different reasons. But you can also try to go at your own and try to basically kick them out of the galaxy. And that really kind of plays into the Babylon 5 type of vibe. So the Galactic Council and all this stuff, plays into trying to make an end game that you won't want to clock out of, because once you hit the end game, most galaxies colonized, that's where stuff starts really ramping up on the next stage, this sort of big level politics and big level grand strategy. So you have this Cold War that could erupt and start having the elder species start popping their heavy duty technologies out. At the same time, there's also these grand menaces, threats that are from outside of the galaxy that are existential threats, which, of course, in a show like Star Trek, that's every other week, something from outside the galaxy shows up and threatens to destroy Earth, the Whale Probe, V'ger, you know, things like that. And in this, those also happen. Something can come and, you know, you were mentioning earlier, a thing type of entity shows up and takes over a whole civilization. Those are the sort of grand menaces that will show up in Lord of Rigel, which can actually put a wrench into this galactic Cold War, where the two elder races are basically just sitting on their WMD stockpiles and getting ready to drop Nova bombs. So as a player, you're trying to navigate through this sort of tricky stuff, because yeah, you can get a lot of tech. You might have a planet killer by the time you get to the end game. You're building small moon-sized spacious, but that's still nothing compared to the sort of power that the elder species can bring to bear against you if they decide that you are too much of an upstart.
And definitely one thing too with the end game, because end game, of course, usually ends up being just like a cleanup fest. I feel like you're just kind of vacuuming your carpets, right? Just getting the dirt picked up, and then we're done. One thing that we're really trying to add, especially with the menaces, is that we really mean the word menace. Players should fully expect to lose star systems because of menaces. And we are not going to have and it'll be a future article, but I'm sure we've had people ask us before, like, well, gift quests. No, not really. We don't have like small quests like, oh, if you go to whatever, Alpha Centauri, find this chest of gold, you know, and somehow it's going to fulfill you as a gamer. What we're really going to try to do is have something like menaces, that menaces will be a type of quest, right? So some menaces will be a military threat. You will simply just have to build up your forces and defeat them. But it may also require that you get into diplomacy, because you're going to need your allies to help you, because you simply don't have the resources yourself. And that's one thing, is we're actually going to allow the game that when you have a menace attacking you, it increases your modifiers for a likelihood of getting non-aggression packs and stuff like that. So the AI will actually respond to you trying to get help, or at least stop any sort of warfare that you're involved in, so that you can focus on taking out these grand menaces. But others will require things like, maybe you need to research your way out of this, right? So you can kind of, the player can make a choice between, I can throw a ton of ships at this thing and it will destroy a lot of them, or if I move my empire towards research for a time being, I can research my way out of this and maybe even get a reward for that. So we're kind of hoping that menaces and the Galactic Council will really help the end game kind of spice things up. And the other thing that we hope will spice things up is strategic resources. And one of the places that we kind of took the idea of this from is actually in RTS, which is Company of Heroes, right? Because the whole point with Company Heroes is you take different strategic points that feed you specialized resources, right? And you begin to fight over certain places because you need those resources to continue on. And so what we're hoping to do is not only with minor races and giving them specialty resources, but just random star systems, is that players will think about the galactic map in a more strategic fashion. They're going to think to themselves, hey, I can't lose this star system, not because it's ultra rich and I need to make warships, but maybe this poor planet has this very rare resource and I need it to build endgame weaponry or some sort of large structures, etc. Or the game has a research victory, so you'll need strategic resources.
So you kind of get into the Klingon praxis thing again, because it's like, oh, this is the one place that we get this thing that enables that tech. So if we lose this, that's gone. And then it becomes, it behooves the enemy to take it. Right? So.
Yeah, exactly. And it behooves the enemy to take it. Also behooves you to obviously defend it, or even you, when you think about invading star systems, it kind of adds a new dynamic, right? Because players can think to themselves, do I want to take this system that has lots of population? That's always the standard thing, right? You try to disable the enemy's ability to make war, and the simplest way is taking planets with lots of population and high resources. But with adding strategic resources, you know, players may choose to take these crap colonies, maybe this tundra planet that's only, you know, poor resources because it contains the special that allows them, and it may be the only planet that has it for that empire, that contains a resource that lets them build mega weapons. So it kind of spreads out the value of each star system, and again, it just gives players more choices. And a little more thought in that end game.
And as we mentioned earlier, strategic resources also get tied a bit with the minor species. So they'll tend to fall on worlds that will have a strategic resource. So you may have to deal with these pre-warp civilizations in order to get things like the tech to build a Dyson sphere and things like that.
Oh, that sounds crazy. I like it. I like that there are end game options. Because, yeah, like I said, I check out in a lot of end games. The XCOM happens and you have to... Oh, so yeah, Christian in the chat was wondering if there's a grand menace threatening, the universe, will there be the option for everyone to, we have to band together like in Pacific Rim and make
a
Jaeger?
Will there be giant robots?
Yes.
robots, but I was saying earlier on this issue is that there will be modifiers within the diplomacy system that play. It will make it so even if let's say you're fighting someone, right? There will be modifiers that will help you make peace treaties quicker and make alliances to work together to take out the Grand Menace. And even within the Galactic Council, you'll be able to present resolutions to join forces and have the Galactic Council go after these grand menaces. Because it won't just be like, you know, Master of Orion 2, there's a space dragon coming, so I'll just take my really nice, nifty Doomstar, park it in my star system, and kill it in one shot. That was a really big menace kill there. We actually want players to lose systems. We want you to die. That's a nice way to put it. We want you to actually have a stake in the menace and to be irritated by it and annoyed by it and actually want to treat it
Can I throw an idea down here?
I just noticed. Okay.
Voltron.
Yeah, go for it.
Okay, so there's Voltron. On five planets, there are pieces of Voltron, and you have to find the five lions and then assemble them, and then you...
Oh, wow, it's not unloading data. Oh, wow.
Do you see this?
Yeah, I'm seeing it.
Do you see this?
It's not unloading data as you switch in and out. It's loading multiple instances of the systems, nebulas.
The controller's not unloading data. Because actually what's happening is we ran into this early on in development is we'd make the galaxy... And it would take forever to create a star system. So to transition from the galaxy view to the star system view that this is would take forever. It was very far from seamless. So what we ended up doing was actually making it all one big scene with a controller that should be enabling, disabling stuff. I haven't seen this in a long time.
This is interesting. Yeah. Every system I'm going to... Oh, I have a colony here. Every system I'm going to. Yeah. Yeah, I haven't even every system. So
wow.
Yeah, but if you notice, that works. It's the same colony. So it's the controller. Yeah.
It's exactly the same colony.
The controller is not unloading data.
That's what you get
different
when you research
planet,
cloning.
Same colony. Exactly.
Yeah.
Different systems, colonies always seem the same.
Yeah.
Wait, where's that? Where's that double merged? There we go, right there.
Well, the Star is actually doing a double merged thing too, because you can see there's a Z fighting issue on the Star. Oh my God, it's turned into a butt gas giant.
I was about to say it looks like a butt. It looks like a butt.
Butt Pirates of Eridana 6.
Eridanus.
That's the dry the Eridanus.
Yeah. Good night, ladies and gentlemen. And we're out.
Seriously, though, can I talk about Voltron for a minute? I'm thinking like every good sci-fi, they have the threat is coming. We have to find the super weapon, right? So perhaps there's scattered around. If you're quick, you'll find the pieces and assemble the super weapon, and maybe you have to trade another race for it because they've already found it. So, I'm just saying there's like five
Voltron,
lions,
but
right?
Which
so if they found one of the lions, you got to get it from them, and you can either get it, you can get it friendly, or you can get it.
Oh, come on, I wanted 15 vehicles. That's what I wanted. I wanted 15 vehicles. Come on, no one likes Vehicle Voltron except me. Why
is
that?
I think it's more about you.
God damn it, I love Vehicle Voltron. All the planets look like butts. Wait a minute. Oh God! Yeah, that Earth planet right there looks like a butt.
So, well, you were saying like you have these giant menaces that'll come and just whoop your ass, right? Like, how do you turn it back? Because that's basically what my thought is like you have to find something to keep it from steamrolling you, because then it gives you power over it.
Yeah, and so essentially, a lot of it's going to be simply a matter of balancing what's the right amount of. Force that we want to give these Grandmasters. And we haven't really sat down and designed all of them yet. We have conception idea of what we want to do with them. But really it's going to be a lot of play testing, because essentially what we want to have happen is that we want it so that it's difficult for the player, potentially even a game ender for the player. So that if a player just kind of gets complacent at end games, like, whatever, I don't really care anymore. That, yes, there are still threats out there and things that are larger than you. You need to always be caring. So really, I think a lot of that is just going to be a matter of gameplay and sorting out those sorts of things to where you're balancing the difficulty and the number of forces that the menace has versus what you have. Or, you know, versus what...
Because I'm would super fond of Mass Effect, right? Like, not so much 1, not so much 3, but really 2. So, but the thing going on in there, right, is like you basically have like the Lovecraftian elder gods are coming back to devour us, right? And so we have to figure this out, right? And luckily humans are like the coolest people, so we figure it out. But if it wasn't for us, but you know, I mean, it's kind of like whenever you're talking about like, you know, there's like this whatever is going to show up. It's like randomly pick some galaxy destroying evil. Right, yeah, like you don't know what it's going to be, but it's going to show up, and yeah. So I don't know. I mean, that's kind of neat, right? And but depending on what it is, there might be a different way to deal with it, or maybe it just shows up and whips your ass until it's, you know, it feels that you've had enough, and then it leaves, and maybe comes back. Because if you
so talking about the Reapers is kind of the right kind of idea for the sort of scale, like. You know, different galaxies, you're going to get stuff ranging from, you know, Borg-like threats that they show up and they start infesting planets and spreading, like, the Borg or Halo's flood.
Zombies.
That's sort of the scale we're thinking of. And that might require just extreme sanctions, like you just start sterilizing whole star systems. You might even be the one using system killers to try to just create a buffer zone to stop them. And then you have other threats, which might be more like, the Reapers. They show up and they just start harvesting.
So is it
going to
be kind of a menace
like
that just creeps across the map? Like they pick a place and show up and then just put out a zone of destruction that's ever widening until you deal with it?
Yeah, different menaces will spread in different ways. Obviously, we still have to spend a lot of time doing design. some like that threat that might start infecting species and assimilating them, that's going to be, you know, spreading a bit different because it's going to be limited by the technologies of whoever they take over. You know, if they, you know, start with the Tharn have really crappy research, so they're going to be spreading like a disease at the pace of a nuclear drive, which is really slow. But some of these other threats will be, you know, different. It's going to be dependent on what we think works and what doesn't work. But we're going to be doing a lot of
the other races, right? Like something really bad shows up. Is the player going to be the only one that notices? Or do the other races all kind of like say, okay, we're going to quit fighting each other and we're going to take care of the Reapers and then we'll get back to killing each other?
Yeah, as James mentioned, there'll be diplomatic stuff going on under the table. There'll be modifiers that should be encouraging them to band together. The two elder species, the Rigellans and Arcturians, also take a particular offense to things from outside of the galaxy getting onto their turf.
Sorry, answering a completely random question from the chat room.
About cat people.
Yeah, why is it always cat people? And I'm thinking it's because there's so much more like mythology and mystery and lore.
No, Dukes surrounding... and Kil'rathi are awesome.
Well, yeah, no, but I mean, awesome, you
no, we need the Chikrathi up in here.
I know,
because
new master.
No, I'm talking about
enough
chickens.
With the cat boobs. Chickens. We don't need that.
Chikrathi. Oh. Yeah, we had last week, I don't know if you saw, we had a very chicken-friendly space game called Conflicts, and it was great. Oh, someone wanted to ask about a broken link on your website, broken alpha
sure.
link?
There's broken a what?
Broken link on your website, hang on.
Sure, where?
Something about an alpha? Hang on.
Link should go to the IndieDB, unless it's really old in the news. I mean, really old.
Could be on the bottom there. Let's just see what it does.
That should work. Click on that, yeah.
No, click on the big
click panel. On the big demo one. That should work.
Okay, that worked.
Yep.
We'll click it. Yeah, those should work. Those should all link to
IndieDB.
Guess what? For saying that, give me about 5 minutes here.
Snap.
That's super easy fix.
Mac is also broken. And wait a minute.
Is Linux?
Oh, yeah. All three of them. Oh
man. Fixable. Hang on.
Well, to be fair, Linux is always broken.
Thank you. How do I?
Now I wonder how long those
Moto Bene. Thank you, Moto Bene. Thank you.
By the way, the galaxy generator is really old. Like, it doesn't... Oh, gosh.
It doesn't even remotely look like this.
I think that's September 2014 old. It looks almost not...
Oh, shit. That's a year now.
Yeah, it's
September
an old...
2015.
Yep. It's
Happy September, by the way, everyone. Oh, my God. It's September. Did everyone get Mad Max on Blu-ray today? You should have. God damn it.
You know, I didn't care for the new Mad Max.
What?
I just like crushed your soul on that one.
And you like the new Terminator, so and you hate.
Whoa!
Pacific
whoa!
Rim,
whoa!
So
whoa!
Can't,
whoa! Wait a minute!
Who said hates new
What? No, you said you like the new Terminator, but a lot of people don't like it.
Yeah, the heck with them. It has Arnold Schwarzenegger. End of story. That's where.
Salvation was pretty goddamn terrible.
Yeah.
Their problem was they had blood in it. Anything that she's in, even though she's an okay actress, just dies. I don't know why. Yeah.
Like falling skies.
Yeah, that's her name.
Is that her actual
name? Random doctor, I'm your friend.
Yes.
Her name is Moon Bloodgood?
Yeah.
No, it isn't. Why?
Yes,
vampires must really like her.
Yeah, well, that's like her Eskimo name or something.
Oh, yes. Jeezy crazy.
Well, the second thing that the internet has is what is her age?
She's 39. Wow.
Hey, guess what? Molto Bene, it all works now. It was literally, I had capitalized the D in downloads in that link, and it should have been lowercase. But I just pulled it. The page should be up to date that it's linking to.
She's tall.
You should be good to go.
She's 5'10". That's tall for a girl. What has she been in?
She's not horrific.
Let's see. Oh, she was. She was in Terminator.
And Falling in the Sky, she was one of the reasons I quit watching the show.
Really?
Yeah, it's just like...
She was on a lot of shows that didn't really go very far. Like Journeyman. Journeyman was great. Human Target. I loved Human Target. That was such a silly show. What the fuck is North Shore? Just Shoot Me was just terrible. She was only in an episode. She was only in like an episode of some of these. She was in a main cast in Journeyman, though. Maybe that explains. Journeyman was so good. Wow, her first date, her first movie was called Win a Date with Tad Hamilton, and her role, quote unquote, gorgeous woman. that's according to the Wikipedia.
Yeah.
Anyway, wow, we got off topic. Anyway, but that's actually her name. Oh, her name, full name is Corina Moon Bloodgood, and she's from Nebraska. Okay, I wouldn't have expected that. But yeah, thanks for fixing that link. So let's wrap up because we've been talking for almost 2 hours, guys.
Yeah, it's been a while,
which is pretty great. So when can the public get their hands on this, do you think?
So that will be much sooner than everyone thinks. So we are going to have a Kickstarter that should be starting September 28th. And at that time, we're going to release the tactical demo. It won't have the new game stuff, but it'll have just the skirmish mode. And players will be able to kind of go in there. They'll be able to play two species. And then we're going to have a really kind of a low-end tier on our Kickstarter. We're still setting all the prices. And
I was going to say, you kind of mentioned Kickstarter, but like that's all you've said was that you're about to have one.
Yes, it'll be September 28th.
Oh, okay.
So we're getting near here. And after that Kickstarter campaign, if everything goes through and we reach our goal, backers will be rewarded with a tactical combat demo that'll have four or potentially six species. It'll also have some other enhanced features like boarding and stuff like that will be enabled. Oh. And some other stuff. We'll also try to do like an early alpha access. We're kind of hoping for by the end of the month, by the time the Kickstarter gets started, that we should actually have a core game built. Oh. That players will be able to literally just have the a military victory. So essentially, you'll be able to build it up. It won't be pretty. It won't be polished. Nothing like that. But the core fundamentals are going to be there, right? So you can build up your colony, build starships, have tactical combat, eliminate all the AI, and win a game. So that's kind of what we're hoping for. So we've been making a lot of progress the last few weeks. Like, it's just kind of been incredible. Like, I think probably about 80% of what you're seeing here, especially with the colony stuff, has probably been done in the last month and a half.
Oh, I see.
So
when does the Kickstarter campaign start again?
September 28th, 2015. So
I'm going to put that in the show notes.
Oh, perfect. Thank you.
I'll put that in the post for the this podcast post.
Yeah. So we're trying to offer a variety of stuff for everyone and trying to offer good value for people. We know a lot of people have kind of burnt with Kickstarter. So
yeah, there is a bit of fatigue. Basically, my suggestion, I kind of study Kickstarter. But I work in SEO, so I know something of marketing. Mm-hmm. Have a really good pitch video, really clear, simple tiers, lots of clear text, definitely fill out the FAQ and the risk sections, big time. Those are kind of the biggies. So those will definitely help, I think.
Okay, great. Yeah, and. It's certainly stuff that we're starting, like, and we've read a lot of stuff too. We're, again, just like you said, the simple tiers. So I'm not quite sure how many tiers we're going to have, but you definitely, people can expect us not to have the mega million tiers. Like,
of course not.
You know, we're not going to have a, you know, if you pay me $5,000, we'll fly you up to Bellingham, Washington, so you can have, you know, lunch or dinner with the devs. It's not going to happen.
No.
What we're really hoping to do, and again, this is all subject to change. I think at the end of this week, we have a meeting with our marketing guy to kind of see what it's all going to look like. We're kind of still getting some quotes about getting swag and stuff like that for LOR. But what we're really hoping to have, it'll probably be sub 100, maybe like $80. But it would kind of be like an LOR pack where the player would be able to get Lord of Rigel, any expansions, DLCs that were released. And we already have those sorts of things planned out. And then also a lot of swag, looking at getting like a USB stick that would actually have Lord of Rigel on it. All that kind of stuff. And then also trying to be competitive on the low end and trying to give early birds some rewards.
I was going
to
say, early birds, people really dig those things.
Oh, yeah. So definitely, guys, be watching that first day because we haven't totally finished up the numbers yet, but I can assure you there should be some big discounts on LOR. We kind of have a conception as to what we think it's going to about sell for. Of course, nowadays, everything has to go through Steam if you try to sell them on the Steam distribution platform. Mm-hmm. So the number that we're kind of sticking with is something in the $30 region. That seems to be what other 4X games are kind of going for, unless that's something like Galciv 3. But love, you know, indie 4X games, Star Drive 2, stuff like that. They're going for about $30. We think our game, when complete, will be comparable. So that's kind of the target range. So
That's a good mid-range price, sure.
Yeah, so people can expect some big discounts. And so be there. And we really hope we can get a lot of support to get the project funded. We have, if you don't mind me giving a pitch here, Brian, I'm not just going to go for the whole.
That's kind of what we're here for.
I'm going to get the whole pitcherino here. We have people.
It winds that, up. Go ahead.
We have lots of people on our team that have experience in making games. Adam worked on Battlestar Galactica Diaspora, which is a fantastic Free Space 2 Total Conversion.
It's amazing.
It received a lot of praise. And then also we have people like our 3D modeler who also worked on that project. He also worked for Battlestar Galactica Online. He just has done just absolutely fantastic artwork. He is 150% committed to this project. He pretty much came to us and just said, I need this much money to survive and to eat top ramen. So if you can feed me top ramen, I want to make your game because it sounds good to me and I've always wanted to do something like this. So we have his total commitment. If you're liking the 3D models that you're seeing in the game, those are all thanks to him. We have some fantastic programmers that some of which have made a game from start to finish. And that's really critical in anytime you're making a game is having people around that have seen it to the finish line. Because a lot of times, a lot of indies fall apart somewhere between the midway point and the end. And we have people that have seen it through. Adam obviously has seen a project through till the end. So we have that experience to bring to the table. And we're trying to learn from the mistakes of other games and try to offer you guys competitive prices on our Kickstarter. So we hope you partake in them. And September 28th, we will have that Kickstarter started. And we look forward to getting your support.
Well, that's a very solid pitch, and that's another thing to include is all the shit you guys worked on. That'll definitely be awesome.
Yeah.
So that seems like a great place to wrap up. So James, Adam, I want to thank you guys for talking with us for about 2 hours. about Lord of Rigel.
Rigel.
And guys, remember, it's lordofrigel.com. And remember, September 28th, the Kickstarter launches. So keep an eye out for that. I'll definitely post about it when it happens. This game is looking really nice. I mean, I think it's skirting a good line between what we're familiar with and what we expect out of a 4X, plus adding enough new stuff to make it unique, which is not an easy. That's a tightrope. That's a tough tightrope to walk. So I think you guys are doing a good job with that, and I cannot wait to see how much further this game goes. So I want to thank you guys for joining us, and I don't remember what we have next week. What do we have next week? Oh, we're talking about Galactic Conquerors next week. And while we're pitching things, one last thing, just I wanted to throw out again, Space Game Junkie is a Patreon. It's at patreon.com/SpaceGameJunkie. We are $20 away from the monthly goal of being able to afford an official TeamSpeak server. So that would be great. So tell your friends. And that's it, folks. We'll see you next week. Thank you, everyone, for joining us. Thank you, everyone in the chat, for engaging and asking questions. Giant and we'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
In space. I'm telling you.
And we're